Dr. Dan's Freedom Forum is on the air. Never send to know for whom the bell tolls. It tolls for thee. Dr. Dan's Freedom Forum is a call to arms for those American patriots who, in the tradition of our founding fathers, will stand up now to defend the Constitution and the liberties that it guarantees to each citizen, to each of us. That is our mission, to explain in a clear and concise manner the direct effect of each issue on the individual, on you personally, not some anonymous being in a distant place, and to define in no uncertain terms the consequences of inaction. Let the battle begin.
This is Dr. Dan. My guest on Freedom Forum Radio is Alex Newman, an award-winning international journalist, educator, author, speaker, investor, nationally syndicated radio host, and consultant. In addition to serving as president of Liberty Sentinel Media, Alex hosts a nationally syndicated radio program and has written for a wide array of publications in the United States and abroad. He currently serves as a contributor to the Epoch Times and is a writer for WorldNet Daily. Alex and I are continuing our discussion of malicious attempts by the global elite to force Americans to accept one-world socialism as the supposed panacea for all societal problems. These neo-authoritarians claim their objective is to benefit all mankind, but they are really driven by greed and a lust for power. In fact, they seek to rule the world for their own personal benefit. The overall topic for discussion is what happens to each of us if the left wins. We are now defining exactly who is the enemy. Who are these global elite neo-authoritarians? We also will discuss the signs that they have, in fact, won the war. And most important, what happens to us if they do win?
And so who are these people behind the scenes doing the manipulating? Well, that's what I really go through in my book, The Deep State, The Invisible Government Behind the Scenes. And I identify, and there's a lot more than we have time to identify. There's a lot more than I had space to identify in the book. But I identify a network of organizations, not just in the United States, but around the world. I start off with the above ground ones. You've got things like the Council on Foreign Relations, right? Very, very powerful organization. When Hillary Clinton was Secretary of State, she gave them a talk and she said they're the ones who tell her what she should be doing and how she should be thinking about the future. Joe Biden joked on stage while the cameras were rolling that the president of the Council on Foreign Relations, Richard Haass at the time, was his boss. You've got congressional leaders, you've got media leaders, you've got big business CEOs, you've got journalists, Supreme Court justices, Republican leaders, right? All part of this big club. They've got about 5,000 members at any given time. And a lot of the information that we have has come from their own documents. They publish a magazine called Foreign Affairs, which is very, very revealing if you read it. There was also a whistleblower who came out of there, Admiral Chester Ward. He spent 16 years as a member of the CFR and then defected. And he wrote a book with Phyllis Schlafly. I actually have a copy behind me. It's called Kissinger on the Couch. And it is so powerful what they're exposing. He says that this is basically a cabal dedicated to undermining American sovereignty and building an all-powerful one-world government. He says this sentiment is pervasive throughout the membership. He says if you want to know the policy of the U.S. government a few years in advance, all you got to do is read their magazine, Foreign Affairs. He said there's no term in the English language that they hate more than America First. I mean, this was written decades ago, long before Donald Trump came on the scene. So this is a very important group, but of course, it's not isolated, right? It's actually connected to a much broader international network. There's another book behind me, Tragedy and Hope by Carol Quigley. This was Bill Clinton's mentor at Georgetown University, a history professor, and he gives a little bit of the background of the context behind the Council on Foreign Relations. So he traces it back to Cecil Rhodes, who was a mining magnate backed by the Rothschild banking dynasty, made a huge fortune in Southern Africa in the mining sector. He actually had a country named after him, Rhodesia, that was incidentally taken down by his ideological descendants, Jimmy Carter, Henry Kissinger, etc. So that country no longer exists. It's now called Zimbabwe, and it's ruled by a bunch of mass murdering Marxist maniacs. But this guy, Cecil Rhodes, he amassed a massive fortune during his life. And when he died, he left it to a series of trusts and other organizations. And he created what Carol Quigley describes as a network with concentric circles of power and influence, where the central core makes a lot of the decisions. And then as you work your way out, once you get to the outer circles, these people don't even know what the whole plan is. They're just, you know, fulfilling their role. And so he points out that the Council on Foreign Relations is just an outpost of a broader organization that operates at the international level. Their sister organization in the United Kingdom is called the Royal Institute for International Affairs. On the continent, they've got the European Council on Foreign Relations. So that's one of the big nodes of power. Again, not a secret society. They have a website. It's CFR.org, if I'm not mistaken. They publish most of their members. They have a membership list published. And so you can find them. I mean, they got a headquarters in Washington, in New York. They've got a satellite office in Washington, D.C. Then you've got several other organizations that are similar. They're not quite secret societies, although you really don't hear about them much. You have the Trilateral Commission, founded by David Rockefeller, and his minion, Zbigniew Brzezinski, who served as national security advisor to Jimmy Carter. Long story there, but basically, when he was a professor at Columbia University, he had written a book, Zbigniew Brzezinski had written a book called America's Role in the Technotronic Age, in the Technotronic Era. It was between two ages. And he basically argues that America is obsolete. We got to move past that. He says Marxism is kind of the next step forward in human evolution. He does give some, you know, obligatory criticism of the Soviet system, but he paints Marxism basically as a benign step forward. And then ultimately, he describes a technocratic system where self-government is essentially eliminated. Individual liberty is eventually eliminated. And you're left with technocracy, basically ruled by experts, scientists, engineers, under the guise of efficiency or sustainability or equality, or, you know, pick your empty talking points and insert them there. You got the Bilderberg Group, right? Another powerful organization, 120 to 180 of the most powerful people in the world get together every year. You've got then the secret societies. I mean, actual secret societies like the Bohemian Grove out in Northern California. Thousands of the most powerful men in the world get together every year in the Redwood Forest of Northern California. Every Republican president going back 100 years, with the exception of Donald Trump, has attended. Richard Nixon wrote in his autobiography that the most important speech he gave in his entire political career was the one he gave at the Bohemian Grove. And later, of course, those audio tapes were leaked, and we found out he thought it was the most blankety-blank homosexual thing he had ever seen in his life. So clearly he wasn't a big fan, but, you know, he gave a very nice nod to it in his autobiography. And so this is another powerful group. You've got the Skull and Bones Society at Yale University, John Kerry member, George H.W. Bush, George W. Bush, Senator Prescott Bush, you know, Supreme Court justices, CEOs. They recruit 15 new people each year. So you have this whole network of very, very powerful, highly secretive organizations that are pulling the strings behind the scenes. And one of the things about these groups, one of the historians who did more work on this than anybody, Anthony Sutton out of Stanford University, he says that they like to have both sides of the argument in the bag. They like to control the right side of the argument and the left side of the argument, so that no matter what way it goes, they end up in charge. And we see that so clearly, like in the 2004 election, right? We had a choice between George Bush, member of Skull and Bones, or John Kerry, member of Skull and Bones, both also affiliated with the Council on Foreign Relations, both having attended Bilderberg. Right, so they're all part of this little network, this little club. And ultimately, you know, they use and manipulate a lot of people. So and finally, I'll say this is the most important thing to understand. I approach this all as a Christian through the lens of the Bible. And so I believe that what we're dealing with is actually evil. Right. A lot of people think that these are just people with bad ideas. And if we just explain that our ideas are superior, the problem will go away, because they assume that everybody else is thinking like they think. Right. They don't have any desire to enslave their neighbor. They don't have any desire to exterminate populations. And so they don't imagine that other people could think that way. But we know other people think that way. Look back through human history. It's a never ending tale of megalomaniacs and psychopaths and sociopaths taking power, using ruthless means to enslave, cheat, pillage, steal, etc. So we would be very naive if we didn't think we had those kinds of people in America. We absolutely do. Everywhere in the world has them. And when you really boil it down, I do believe that this is satanic. I believe we're confronted with absolute evil. And I do believe that's the only sensible explanation. I don't know how else you can make sense of it.
agree with you that this is definitely evil. And what's interesting to me is that these people all control enormous amounts of wealth. They are all enormously wealthy. They come from wealthy families. I went to Yale Medical School, so I know all about that. I was not a member, obviously. But you hear about these things, about societies, and you look back in history, and for centuries and centuries, people were controlled by these enormously wealthy people. In medieval times, you had their kings and queens and their dukes and duchesses and the courts. And then everyone else owned nothing except maybe a cart, maybe a mule, pots and pans. And they rented at high price a little plot of land around in the castle. And the king taxed them enormously, and or the duke or whatever. And they owed their protection to these very powerful people who were also extremely wealthy. They owned everything. And then what happened? You came to America, we threw them out. We threw them out of America, even to the point of putting in the Constitution that the government cannot confer titles of nobility on people, because our founders understood these were evil people. And I think that what happens, we're seeing the descendants of the same kings and queens from hundreds and hundreds of years ago. We threw them out and they want back in. Very simply, we threw them out, they want back in. But that's what it is. Wealth. And it is, you are absolutely right, it is evil. It is greed, real, true, base greed, and a total lust for power that inhabits the souls of these people. They are the descendants of the snake from the Garden of Eden, as far as I'm concerned. That's who we're dealing with. And I often say to myself, look, I'm a free market guy. I love the free market. Go earn a ton of money. As long as you're not cheating people, you're doing it honestly, earn as much money as you can. But that does not give you the right to turn around and take that money and try to control the lives of everyone else. Make a ton of money, go buy an island, enjoy the rest of your life, swim in the ocean, do whatever you want to do, but leave me alone. Because your wealth does not give you the right to control my life.
Yep. I couldn't agree with you more. And, you know, I'm also a free market guy. And if you want to make a fortune serving your fellow human beings, which is how you make money in a free market, you produce goods and services that other people want to buy. You take inputs, you add value to them, and you sell them at a profit. Then by all means, more power to you. That's wonderful. Where I draw the line is when you then start using your fortune to try to make me into a slave, to try to relieve me of my private property through dishonest means or through the force of government. That's where we need to draw the line. And that's one of the things that our founding fathers in this country were so astute about. They designed a system that was designed to restrain these wicked impulses that unfortunately are, almost ubiquitous to varying degrees, right? They looked at humanity through the lens of the Bible, and they a lot of them were Calvinists. They believed in, you know, the total depravity of man. You know, we're not going to trust human beings with power. We're not going to let human beings rob each other or loot each other using the force of government. So they tried very hard to limit the size and the scope of government, and then to create a system of checks and balances. You know, we're taught in school about the three branches, right? But they also limited it in other ways and created other checks like state and federal, right? Where the states actually retained a huge amount of sovereignty and influence, whereby they could, if necessary, and in fact, Thomas Jefferson and James Madison both said the rightful remedy would be for states to resist this. So we were very fortunate to be born in a country that was had a government designed by people who really had a good understanding of human nature, who had really spent a lot of time studying history. But that is what we're dealing with. It is just the sinful nature of man. And some people are just unbelievably wicked. They have an obsession, not just with earning money. I have no problem with people who want to earn money. The problem is when they want to earn money through dishonesty, through coercion, through fraud. And then when they want to start stealing liberty and micromanaging your life or running your life for you. And, you know, that's what we have to stop. That is actually, it's critical that we stop these people. They don't know better than me how I should run my life. They don't know better than you how you should run your life. And almost every time in history where we've seen people claim that they know better how people should run their lives than they know themselves, it has ended up with concentration camps, gulags, torture, starvation. It never ends well. I always challenge people, show me one place where these kinds of ideas have worked well. And of course, the answer is there is no place. There's never been a time or a place in human history where these ideas have worked because they're wrong. They're wicked, and therefore we must resist.
You know, you touch on something that is very dear to my heart, and that is the absolute beauty of the Constitution and the Bill of Rights. We have the Declaration of Independence, which is kind of like the statement of the philosophy of the founding fathers. You have the Constitution itself, which kind of is like a shop manual, an operator's manual for the government. And then you have the really what I think is the most important is the Bill of Rights, which defines in no uncertain terms the relationship, the limits of power between the government and the individual and the individual states. They really argued in Philadelphia and sweated to come together to say, we want a government, a central government that has just enough power to do the things that are best done most efficiently by a central government. The rest, you cannot touch. And that's what they designed. They designed what really is what I consider to be a perfect system. And that's why you look at that and you say, well, the states created a federal government or a central government that was not a party to the agreement. There's no signature block for the federal government in the Constitution. There were the 13 states that agreed to form this union for the purpose of having things run smoothly. And that's pretty much what it was. I mean, they expected congressmen to go to Washington for a couple months, maybe three, and then come home, and most importantly, live by the rules and the laws that they had passed. Well, that ain't happening. And that's one of our problems. They go up there poor, come back wealthy when they eventually do come back after they screwed us all over and do whatever the hell they want. That's the system we're living under now.
Yep, it is. And, you know, we still have the Constitution on paper. In theory, at least, it's the supreme law of the land. But unfortunately, we're at the point now where most of these politicians wouldn't know the Constitution if it bit them in the face. No, really. I mean, you have law schools where you've got armies of lawyers graduating with law degrees. They have never in their lives read the Constitution. You know, they know all about case law. They know all about the rules of evidence. But they couldn't tell you diddly squat about the U.S. Constitution that even authorizes the federal government to exist in the first place. So the Constitution was an absolutely brilliant document, and it is a brilliant document. I think a few of the amendments that we added were rather unfortunate. You know, start with the 16th and 17th, but you know, as originally constituted, it was brilliant. It remains brilliant to this day. But the problem is, we have a political class that is not only not willing to enforce it, but a political class that is completely hostile to it. And then worse than that, you have an electorate that is completely ignorant about it and in many cases hostile to it because they have now gotten such a big percentage of the population dependent on illegal, unconstitutional federal programs to suggest that the federal government ought to follow the Constitution and all your free streams of money are going to go away. And they've been very strategic about this, right? They got the farmers dependent with the farm subsidies. They got the poor dependent with the food stamps. So they've been very strategic about making sure they can get a large enough segment of the public dependent on federal money so that they hope it'll become impossible to ever restore the Constitution. But I do believe that if this country, if freedom around the world is going to have any hope of surviving, it's going to have to involve returning to the principles in the Constitution. That's obviously a very, very long-term objective. There is no silver bullet where we can just snap our, you know, everybody wants a quick solution. Unfortunately, it took us generations to get into this mess. Unfortunately, it's going to take us generations to get out of this mess. This is a multi-generational task we have before us here, but it is essential. I mean, the prospect of losing giving up this incredible document, giving up this system, giving up the principles upon which the system was founded, should be unthinkable to thinking Americans. And so we have an obligation to fight this battle, and we have an obligation to win it.
And that concludes another episode of Dr. Dan's Freedom Forum. Join the battle on our website, www.drdansfreedomforum.com. The right to own private property that cannot be arbitrarily confiscated by the government is the moral right and constitutional basis for individual freedom.
Yeah, when I play the Hoochie Coochie Man, I get joy in everything. Everything, everything, everything gonna be all right this morning.